Chapter 3, The Dental Health Check. When this book was published in 2014, I discussed a standard 12-point dental health check. More recently, it's common to find practices offering a 16, 17, 18 or more point check, depending on how different structures are discussed and reported upon and how protocols have been developed in each practice. I'll start with some suggestions for the opening conversation. How do you usually open the conversation with your patients in the surgery? I mean, after the essential social rapport building and relaxing chit-chat of, hello, Mrs. Patient, how are you doing today? Come on in and take a seat. Do you start with a universal opening line and indication of the purpose of the visit? Any problems? I don't think this is a useful way to introduce the appointment. This might helpfully signal the start of the real business of the appointment, but it also confirms to patients that the dentist really is looking for work. It's been interesting to observe increasing numbers of dentists trying to soften this question as if they're aware they might be a bit too blunt. So they ask, any concerns or sensitivities? I admit I also hate anything to report, what can I do for you today, or anything to tell me, as I believe the professional has the duty of care and should be specific. It's not satisfactory to leave the patient to decide what is or isn't important. Why should patients have to do all the work in identifying key areas to bring up and discuss? My recommendation as a preliminary opening line is always to make the first question of the appointment a very pointed one about health, i.e. the first check of the dental health check, check number one, how healthy do you feel your teeth and gums are? This reinforces what the appointment should be all about, helping the patient to maintain a healthy mouth for life. It also forces some patients to take personal responsibility for their dental health, starting with a self-assessment. The ideal patient will respond with, ooh, I think I'm okay, but I have a little bit of bleeding up here, perhaps. And they will definitely understand the real focus of the appointment and the whole dental service. The recalcitrant patient who complains that you're the dentist and should be able to tell might need some further persuasion. And I would suggest that dentists respond with, I'll tell you what I think, and I'll also show you how you can tell too. Is that okay? Following successful use of this first question about health, a framework can be developed for a full dental health check covering all aspects of dental health. My suggestions follow, although practices should always work out their own protocols and order of checks based on what is in the head, the heart, and the hands of the clinicians in the practice. Second check, number two, any problems? This question now makes sense as it follows a general discussion about health. As the dental health professional, you need to know if there are any symptoms of disease or dysfunction, but looking for problems to fix is seen as secondary to the desire to check the patient's health. Third check, check number three, the medical status update. All practices routinely check medical details, whether by questionnaire or updated questionnaires or verbal questions. When it's the job of team members to ask patients for updated medical information on paper or clinipad, practices should have a sentence or two of explanation at hand to let patients know why these updates are important. Please, don't continually tell patients that the information is needed because it's a legal requirement or box ticking, or that it's needed to prevent the practice killing the patient in case something happens to you whilst you're here, or there may be some things we can't do to you if it interacts with your medications. Instead, my practices are positive and honest with a health-based rationale. They tell patients, there are lots of medical conditions and medications you might be taking that do affect dental health, and if we are to do a complete assessment of your dental health each time, we need to know about them. I dislike the use of the standard term medical history during dental appointments. When patients hear the word history, they immediately start thinking of a long time ago and will therefore start to tell you about their real history. While this might be useful once, what dentists really need on a regular basis is up-to-date information on what has changed medically since a patient's last visit. The defence organisations will advise that the full list of medical conditions and drug areas should be checked specifically each time the patient visits the practice, and that patients should sign a full medical update form regularly. I would never contradict their advice, but I believe that four quite specific updating questions will secure the accurate and full information that health professionals need each time, and the use of very specific language that will direct the patient's thoughts to produce the necessary information. These questions are: can you confirm which pills, potions, lotions, infusions or inhalers you use or take regularly? Have you seen your doctor or been to a hospital since we last saw you? Could you be pregnant or menopausal, for women only, obviously? And could you be allergic to anything dentally related, such as mouthwash or latex? These questions are very different to the standard, are you fit and well, and are you taking any medications questions that I hear dentists ask. And they produce very different and much more useful answers than the bland general questions. No patients like to think of themselves as anything but fit and well, and generally they do feel fit and well when they visit. Most of us just forget about the 15 pills we take every day to stay that way. So if you ask us if we're healthy, we're going to say yes as an immediate response. And if you ask us if we're taking medications, we'll say no. You see, I believe we are psychologically programmed to protect ourselves from negative self-images and judgments and from believing we are vulnerable or unhealthy. So dentists have to be very specific in the way they ask patients the questions about these areas. They have to help patients, give them the answers they need. Dentists usually have a high awareness of the complications or even danger inherent in some medications, the risk of necrosis caused by bisphosphonates, for example, and they take great care about how and when these complications are discussed with patients. But I find they are less likely to discuss the dental health impact of having certain health conditions, such as diabetes or heart conditions or taking any one of a long list of medications, because it could be important to dental health. I encourage all my clients to make sure they regularly draw attention to how much more important it may be to those patients to have their dental health assessed, monitored, and managed. One of my clients has decided to implement a double medical alert system on her records. As is traditional in records, she uses the red star or red alert field to highlight patients who are medically compromised. But she's also using a green health alert sticker or field for patients who have medical conditions or make lifestyle choices, which might mean that managing periodontal status could be particularly important. The green health alert sticker or field prompts and reminds clinicians about discussions regarding gum health and control of plaque and gum inflammation. It doesn't matter whether it's a medical questionnaire or verbal questioning that is used for screening. The green sticker or field is a constant reminder that there may be a discussion about the links between dental and medical health, so the end result is that practice attention and patient awareness of dental health is increased. Check number four, lifestyle factors. At the start of this century, it seemed that more and more studies, reports, and articles were being published on the systemic links and implications of dental health. Therapists and hygienists in particular started discussing links between mouth health and heart health with patients, and patients were responding with a great deal of interest. Questions about smoking and alcohol started to appear in medical questionnaires, and increasingly, practices would pitch in to help patients stop smoking. Personally, I'm not sure if smoking cessation services belongs to dentistry, at least not yet. I think if smokers do wish to give up, they're more likely to turn to their GMP or pharmacist for help, and I think there are bigger battles to be fought in the dental arena. But what I do think dentists have a moral and professional duty to do is to inform patients of the dental implications of smoking, for example. Because you smoke, Mr. Smelly, it's even more important for us to keep an eye on your gum health. Or because you smoke, and particularly if you smoke and drink alcohol at the same time, it's even more important that you keep regular dental health visits up so we can keep an eye on your mouth. Then follow this up with an explanation of how smoking affects the gums, how gum inflammation is linked with heart health, how and why oral cancer is on the increase, and inform them of the importance of keeping to regular visits. Ever increasingly, scientific research from around the world is linking dental health to a wide range of medical conditions, such as heart health and the management of diabetes, lung conditions, some cancers. There are links to lifestyle factors such as smoking, alcohol, poor nutrition, major stress events. It has long been understood that gum disease can be inherited or passed from individual to individual within a household. In the 4 years since I first wrote this chapter, the evidence has grown in Europe, and I now direct my clients to the website of the European Federation of Perio, www.efp.org, particularly the sections on the manifesto and the dossier for the latest advice on this field in Europe. I believe it is now incumbent upon the health-focused practitioner to discuss these links with patients. To address this point, some of my practices have decided to screen patients for a number of these lifestyle factors as well as for the associated medical factors. They will ask open-ended questions or make a record of patients who smoke or carry too much weight, may get pregnant or menopausal, have had a recent major stress event, have a family history of some key medical conditions, etc., in order to prompt a little gentle discussion about how it may be more important than ever to maintain excellent gum health and reduce any inflammation in the gums. Patients are responding very, very positively to these discussions. It's important to ensure the whole team knows how to address these aspects with patients. there's a world of difference between if you don't floss, you'll die, and if you're stressed, there's a chance right now that you're more susceptible to the factors that cause gum problems, and there may be other health problems linked with these. You could expand on this with, we're beginning to understand that there are links between how the body responds to stress and the potential for heart problems, and they might be similar to how the body responds to gum inflammation. We now believe that as dental health professionals, we can possibly reduce your risks by helping you control your gum inflammation. Because this is an emerging and changing field, it would also be useful to have some literature at hand to patients, and practices can write their own fact sheets or start collecting published articles as they appear in the professional or consumer press. The Oral Health Foundation's website, www.dentalhealth.org, has a useful Healthy Mouth, Healthy Body leaflet and website section, and www.perio.org has a great collection of literature and some good advice for consumers. I've been keenly waiting for advice to the profession regarding discussions with young patients on the topic of HPV, lifestyle choices, and oral cancer. However, I'm very glad to see this already openly tackled in promotional materials available from www.mouthcancer.org. Check number five, a progress check. We all love to feel cared for, and in a dental practice, this can be achieved by being sure that our progress is being actively monitored each time we visit. Just as we visit gyms and weight control classes regularly to find out how we've changed or improved, being monitored and making progress helps bond patients to their dentist and practice. If you usually turn to your dental nurse to ask if there are any watches recorded on the notes or ask for a status report since the last dental health check, make sure you explain why you're doing this to the patient. Formalise this part of the DHC and tell patients this is what it's been doing every time. It's also an opportunity to praise the patient for keeping healthy. Check number six, patient satisfaction with appearance. Although I believe that practices need to focus on health, I do believe that an aesthetic check should be part of each and every dental health check, and a non-threatening question should be asked every time. Dentists should be in charge of giving patients the opportunity to bring up their thoughts on aesthetics, but on the other hand, I do not approve of written or blatant smile checks for general patients that ask 10 questions about the aesthetics of teeth without balancing questions about gum health and home care habits. Please keep the very detailed smile check for the patient who has admitted to an interest in aesthetics, and preferably, do this verbally. I often tell the true story of seeing my friend Mandy for lunch. This illustrates just how easy it is to miss opportunities. I hadn't seen Mandy for quite some time and I thought she looked great. The conversation sort of went, have you lost weight? Have you changed your hair? What have you done? I had my teeth whitened, she grinned. Wow, what a difference. Maybe I should have it done too. Now that was conversation number one. Later that evening, I spoke with the gorgeous one, conversation number two. I saw Mandy today. She looked great. She's had her teeth whitened. Do you think I should have mine done? 4 months later, I saw my dentist. Now, once in around 1995, he asked me if I wanted to do something about the gap between my front teeth or the small twos that I have. Not interested, I replied then. So my dentist made a note in my records of the question I'd be asked, that I'd responded in the negative, and he never asked me again. And I didn't ask about whitening, because all I was concerned about during my dental health check was whether I'd get away with a clean bill of health and not have a ticking off for not keeping plaque under control since my last visit. But when I got home, the gorgeous one remembered conversation number two. Are you getting your teeth whitened then, he asked. Oh, oops, forgot to ask. But then he didn't ask either. Maybe he doesn't do it. The point is, the following week, I might walk past a new shopfront practice in the local town, which has a poster in the window advertising tooth whitening. What do you think I might do at that point? I maintain that dentists do not know when their patients have had that lunchtime conversation with the Mandys they know, nor do they know when patients are dating and want to look their best, when they come into a little money, when they receive the invitation to the family event or the school reunion. In other words, when their improvable minor imperfections take on a whole new importance. They also don't know when they notice the last bright, smiling celebrity on TV and when they finally look in the mirror and consider doing something that would have been unacceptable to them 10 years ago. The only note of caution I would issue regarding the appearance question is that it must be used well into the body of the dental health check. If used too soon, or worse, as an opening question, the patient might feel the pressure of the sell, whereas you only want him or her to know that you're happy to discuss their mouths from every aspect. So, the dentist is not yet looking inside the patient's mouth, and six important checks have already been completed. Now, some practices may complete more non-clinical checks. Some ask about home care habits and frequency of sugar and acid attacks in the mouth at the dental health check, as well as the hygiene visit. Now, that would bring us up to 8 important pre-clinical checks. But each practice must define their own version of the routine dental health check. Action points from this chapter. 1. Review the language you use at the start of the appointment and make sure patients know that you're interested in their dental health and factors in their life that may affect this. 2. Make sure you give your patients the opportunity to raise any aesthetic concerns.